I normally here with my show, the Social Fabric Podcast, but today I'm privileged and genuinely honored to have been asked to be part of this wonderful initiative by the community, for the community. And what you just witnessed there is just a short trailer of intergenerational conversations that the children of fifth and sixth class in St. Patrick's recorded. So they went off and interviewed parents, grandparents, uncle and aunties. And it was wonderful because out of that we got a few different things. We got to the children learn how to listen a little bit more carefully because they had to listen to somebody talking about knocking on doors and whatever else. But also how to ask questions and how they afterwards there was this debriefing, they were sharing an experience, they were talking about what they learned from it. And there was actually a curriculum attached to it, the local history. So it was actually a wonderful little experiment to do with it as part of the initiative It Takes a Village. And tonight, that's what we want to do. We want to make sure that we give you all the information of all the amazing work has been done so far. And then we all listen to each other and learn something from each other. So that's really what I hope to get out of tonight. And if we don't lose sight of why we're here, and why we're here is the children, the people that are not in this room. There are a couple there, but it's not children. They're a little bit older than children. But that's if we don't lose sight of the children, then we will make this a success. Because it really does take a village to raise a child. And I am convinced of that. And the fact that this room is packed today, and we could have filled it three times, I believe, there's about 300-400 people on the waiting list, means that all of you care about the children of this community. And if we all care for it, then we can make it a success. So what we're going to do, I'll give you a brief idea of what we're going to do tonight. We will have two parts of it, 40 minutes and 40 minutes, with panel discussions. And from the panel discussion, we hope to get to give you as much information as possible what has been done, but also get an idea of what the solutions could be. We will have a little break, 15 minutes, always works well. You can mingle, you can talk about what you've heard so far. And then we'll have another 40 minutes afterwards. There will be contribution from the floor. The idea of the contribution is really, if you have something to add to what has been said, we'd love to hear. And I'm sure you all have something to add. But before we do all of that, there are two wonderful teenagers, I suppose. Are you teenagers yet? Wonderful, I got it right. Whose name I'm going to ruin in a second, Amber and Haley, and they want to share their experience. So before we bring the panel, please give a warm round of applause to Amber and Haley. Don't be shy.
Hello, my name is Amber Kilkenny, and I am delighted to have the opportunity to represent a young person's voice at this forum. I have always loved shopping, and as much as every other 15-year-old girl. When I was younger, I used to beg my parents to let me walk down from our primary school to our Greystone shops with all my friends. We would wander from shop to shop to find the perfect new stationery from Art and Hobby or from the bookshop. I always used to love the excitement of the freedom I had and the independence of being able to rant to my special friend about how my parents didn't let me wear my favourite new orange t-shirt to our St. Patrick's Day parade. I always had a special friend I could talk to about anything. Even through primary school, I noticed that she was always the one there for me and ready to hear me laugh about my small primary school crushes or cry about not knowing how to spell the word because for my weekly English test. She was always there to support me. Nowadays, I notice that not many primary school students are wandering carefree around Greystone's Main Street. They're not getting the same frustrated stares that we used to get for laughing too hard down the road. When I was younger, I would chatter and laugh so much that once at a charity shop, my dad bought me a Little Miss Chatterbox book. Nowadays, I believe my 9-year-old brother would love the feeling of being able to talk as freely as I did back then. My parents starved to hear his little chatty voice, unconscious of the ten sentences he is saying in the moment. When I was younger, they would give out to me for stating such nonsense 24/7, but now they have to send my brother to speech and drama to make him speak louder and more confidently. This situation hasn't just happened to my brother. Children all across Greystones and the further area are scared to speak up. The It Takes a Village initiative will allow students to exceed their full potential in well-being and mental health activities. This will have a knock-on effect on their academic learning and social skills. I am a strong believer that this initiative will help me notice the primary school students' laughs as they walk through the main street with their special friend looking for their new set of stationery. Tá an tágam an deis seo a bheith agam chum a dhearcha a roinnt libh you. I'm delighted to have had the opportunity to share all my views with you tonight.
Good evening. I'd like to start by thanking you for giving me the opportunity to discuss one of the most important topics, which is mental health in young people. My name is Hayley Foley. I'm a third year student in Greystone Community College. Children and many young adults are afraid to talk about what their struggles and difficulties are in fear of being made fun of or judged. What's possibly more concerning is the statistics that as much as 32% of students have been diagnosed with mental health difficulties, which is approximately one in three people. This can range from anxiety, depression, attachment disorders, etc., especially since COVID. Social media today plays a huge role. In fact, it is one of the most common places people tend to get bullied. As many as 41% of students say social anxiety is a result of cyberbullying, and 37% of children associate depression directly with online bullying. Once you're online, you can get bullied. There are very few safe zones, if any. Also, COVID was a big contributor to attachment disorders. My younger sister is only 7. She started junior infants during COVID and had to do online learning almost from the beginning. She got so comfortable being homeschooled that even now she cries going into a classroom each morning so my parents had to drop her into her classroom each morning so the teachers could distract her while they left. She loves dancing and basketball, but refuses to go to training and lessons as she'd be away from my parents and says she missed them. She wouldn't participate in any extracurricular activities. Currently, we view mental health as a sickness or a personal issue. However, we don't talk about it openly. We can feel embarrassed by it or feel weak that we can't cope with it, which is not the reality. Therefore, it is really important to talk to your children and young adults so that they can understand it's okay not to feel okay, that it's okay to ask for help, that they know you are there to support them or just to discuss if they feel sad and can't understand why. We need young people to understand that they can discuss it openly and feel free to seek help if they need it. Since as far back as I can remember, I've always had a tendency to overthink and worry about the little things. I get extremely stressed about exams. Even in primary school, we'd done weekly Friday tests on spelling or math. But as I transitioned into secondary school, it got worse. I'd panic going into exams. I didn't want to go into school when we had exams, and I'd feel genuinely sick. And although I'm lucky to have a great support network in my family who told us to take them in my stride, for me it was a struggle, and it was not easy to do so. When I really think about it, I think I was afraid to fail, getting judged on the results, even if they were good, and letting myself down as I would put so much work into the studying and it would never show in my results. This is a personal matter for me, that effect that I'm trying to overcome. When I'm going through a hard time, I would always turn to a trusted adult. For me, that was my parents. I feel that It Takes a Village initiative would help children open up and become more available to having the support they need and that one trusted adult that I had while I was struggling. Before I end, let me remind you that mental health is just as important as physical health, if not more so important. And we must all play a part to spread awareness. Remember, it's all right not to be okay, but it is also important you seek help when you need it, as it is a serious issue that affects everyone, whether you are dealing with it or know someone that is. On closing, whenever you can, always be kind, as you never know what someone may be going through.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. As we get in the chairs ready, I just want to say that the people here tonight are the most important people in the well-being of our children. There's a representative from every school in the town and in Delgany, which I think is the same town, but it's important to say Greystones and Delgany. I can see here somebody already looking at me, so make sure he's... So there is people from Greystones. No, genuinely, there's principal and representation from every primary and secondary school, which in itself I think is a wonderful achievement. There's representative from the government and the opposition and the councillors. So we have absolutely everybody here, which is it's just wonderful, which means it means a lot to everybody. So thanks a million for being here. And I really do know that you're going to make a difference. So I'm going to bring my really well-dressed panel in for a conversation. Please join us, Rachel, Jennifer, and Niall. There you go. So just so before we start, Niall is here. We were supposed to have Louise Carroll, but Louise unfortunately had to have a procedure and she's in hospital, so she couldn't be here. She's fine, but she couldn't be here. So Niall kindly gave his time to be here to talk through. But he did speak to Louise, and he has a few things to say on her behalf. But can I start from Rachel? Because Rachel, you kind of, it's not your own campaign, but you kind of spearheaded it, and you decided this was going to be a good idea. What brought you to this? What brought you here?
First of all, can I just say, looking around the room here tonight, I'm just blown away by the support. It's just amazing to see that we have support just from our ministers. I know how busy you are, our TD here as well. Jennifer, thank you so much for coming. Our town councillors, all of our principals here from the 8 different primary schools. We have teachers, SNAs out there. We have medical people. We have play therapists. We have a whole mix from our school or from our town community. So I just want to say a huge thank you to everybody for making the effort on a Friday night. It means a lot. So going.
And yeah. I know it means a lot because yeah. I've been dealing with you for the last few months, yeah. And you are kind of running off your feet at the moment, so yeah. It's important to see the support. But what, yeah. What brought us here? What started all this?
I suppose it takes a village. It was born out of just a huge increase in anxiety in our own primary school here, St. Patrick's. And I suppose I could see it in some of the kids, not every kid, and that's, you know, to be pointed out, but some of the kids I could see a huge increase in their anxiety levels. And teachers coming and speaking to me about that and saying that they have seen a huge increase as well, and parents as well. You know, so I'm kind of listening to from everybody and thinking, gosh, I wish I could do more to help. And I reached out and I spoke to our principals here at a meeting as well and asked them, were they experiencing something similar? And it can range really from, you know, anxiety at the school gate, trying to get them past the school gate. And, you know, before it could have been, you know, the younger children, but we're now seeing it in older children, even around 9 and 10. It could be school refusal, you know, just huge anxiety around any change in the day. You know, just the unknown, I suppose, just change in general. And we're kind of seeing that 9, 10-year-olds are really experiencing kind of teenage issues, you know, and that's kind of bringing a huge amount of anxiety. And as the girls were absolutely amazing, Amber and Hayley, you know, social media is a big part of that, you know, phones, things like that, you know, it's all creeping in and there's a lot that the kids are dealing with. So I suppose I wanted to reach out further after talking to the principals, and I thought, you know, I'd like to get a little bit more information. So I put together the questionnaires and I sent out a questionnaire to all of the principals, teachers, SNAs, and to all the parents, and a huge, huge amount filled them out. So a huge thank you for your support on that. So we got over 800 questionnaires back from the parents, which is phenomenal. So thank you very much. And lots back from the teachers and principals and SNAs as well. So it was really overwhelming. So I could get a clearer picture. And then from that, I looked at all that information and I thought, you know what, it would be really good if we could all work together on 10 different themes for the 10 different academic months of the school year as a whole community. So that would be in the schools, in the community. And we sat down with the principals and we put together the 10 different themes and we all agreed that we'd work on them every month. And I think it was Karina there in St. Kevin's came up with a lovely idea that we'd put a notice board up in each of our schools or a corner under It Takes a Village. So, for example, one of the themes of being kind to yourself and others or building confidence, you know, compliments, things like that, and would work on that theme for for the whole month with the kids and mention it in assembly, but also we're asking sports coaches here, everybody, to come on board with those different themes. So if a child is on the football pitch, you know, could be winning and losing is good, is healthy, or whatever theme we're coming under, it can flow into the football pitch or the supermarket or the coffee shop, that we're all working together with the kids on the themes. And we'll also have a website as well. I think we have it up there, do we?
Yeah, we got to show something at the at the interval. There will be the results of the results from the.
And I think it's important to mention also, actually, just within the themed months, we're going to have a guest speaker, a professional guest speaker, to talk in each of the different schools every month as well, just on the topic, so parents can come to that. So one month might be in St. Patrick's, one might be in St. Kevin's, one might be in Lawrence's. So everybody, all the parents in the whole of Greystones and Dalgany, are welcome to come to each. And I suppose it's another support network, like letting everybody know they're not alone in this. It is challenging times for kids, but I think, you know, we're all coming together. We've identified that there is a concern or a problem here, and now we're just working together to further support the kids. And I suppose that's kind of where it came from. And then the play therapist came in then as well, because, you know, when you have parents coming in or teachers coming in and they're telling you it, or I'm seeing it even in kids myself, and you're just looking, you know, there's some kind of the other extreme cases where, you know, it's something a little bit more serious, and, you know, you want to do right by the kids, you know, with the best of intentions. You don't want to push them too far, or you don't want to not push them enough. You want to get expert advice. So that's where the play therapist would come in. And I suppose as I've been looking into it more, I've been realizing that the play therapist wouldn't just be for, say, five priority kids. The play therapist would be for a parent's coming in and saying, I don't know what to do, I'm at my wit's end, this is happening. I can talk to them and say, well, actually, we have a play therapist in on Wednesday. Can I make an appointment for you and your husband, and let's sit down with the play therapist? And then the teacher can, and then the child can go in as well. And I suppose by having a play therapist on site, it's the one environment where the play therapist can link in with the child, with the parents, with the class teacher, with the principal. You know, you can see the learning environment. Yeah. And I suppose also as well, the important thing is, if a child, you know, is really crippled with anxiety, it's really hard to get them into a car and go somewhere different, a different place for them. So, you know, they're already used to going out to somebody else for English or maths or music or PE. So I feel that's why it's a title network for them. And I think it would work really efficiently.
As you can hear, there's a lot of work being done and a lot of passion in Rachel's recounting what has been done so far. So, and interesting, Ailey and Amber were amazing, by the way. You were fabulous. Yeah. And anything you're trying to overcome, you already have overcome, standing in front of these people. So well done. But what caught my interest was they were talking about nowadays, you know, and the difference between them and their siblings. And we were talking about this upstairs, Jennifer, about the, are they growing too fast? You have the spectrum in your house as a parent.
I do, yeah. So I have four children and I have three teenagers. So any issues that are happening, they're happening in my house as well. And I think, and the children are starting to grow up very, very quickly now, you know. And you see them having issues like, you know, when maybe something might have happened when they were 15, now to their sibling, it's when they're 13. And it's really difficult to, you can't control it. And I think tonight is really useful because it's bringing us all together. I think probably the most useful thing is for people to realise that you're not on your own, because I think there is that feeling sometimes if you're going through this at home and you don't know that other people are facing it as well. And actually, I was just talking at the weekend with a good friend of mine, and she has a child around the same age, and I was telling her the stuff that we were seeing in our house. And she said, oh, we're having that as well. She said, I thought I was on my own. I thought it was only us. And I think that's why tonight is really super important, because we all need to know that all of our kids, to certain degrees, are facing challenges that we could never have imagined when we were that age. And even their siblings, who could be a little bit older, didn't have to face. And I think as well, it is very child specific. So one child might find a certain situation very difficult, whereas other children might face other challenges. And so it's very much like, how do we deal with this? Who do we talk to? When we went through it in my family, we hadn't a clue what to do. And we didn't know who to talk to, where to go to. So I think having something where there's help and signposting would be really, really useful. Now, we've reached out to our schools. We've got amazing support from the schools that the children are in. But it is really difficult. And you think, well, have I done something wrong? Is this something we've done? But actually, the children are just, they're being bombarded at every single stage of the day, every single stage of interaction. There's huge pressures on them. And I think it's very difficult to be them at the moment. And if we can come together to help them in any way at all, to give them supports, to give them the tools. We heard from the two girls earlier on, they're incredible. Mm. You know, our kids are really, really good. Yeah. And they're actually really open to talking about this and learning and helping each other. And we just need to facilitate that and give them the tools so that they can even help themselves and their friends. So I think it's really, tonight's exercise is really, really useful. And it's really exciting because I think in Greystones we're very lucky. Greystones, Delgany, we're very lucky.
Be careful. I know. You're never going to go to the other side of the...
I live in Delgany and I'm still not used to saying it. But we are very lucky in that we have brilliant schools, brilliant leadership within the schools. And the fact that you've all come together already to discuss this is brilliant. And so how do we harness that energy and that passion and make a better place for the kids?
And I think when you're talking about tools, I had the pleasure to spend a year during the pandemic working with, you might know Niall Breslin as, I don't know, podcast, a musician, whatever, but he also does, is a founder, co-founder of Lost for Life, which is a charity that specializes in mental health for children, now moving towards teenagers. So I had the pleasure to work with them for a year and seeing the work they're doing. But in terms of tools, then you guys are in about 1,000 schools now with your school program. What are you hearing from the girls and from what Rachel's issues as such, what they've seen at the gates, and also what Jennifer's saying, what are you seeing from, because you're talking to a lot of parents and teachers, you as an organization.
Yeah, and I focus my entire PhD research around your mental health, and I'm more interested in the why.
Yeah,
this isn't normal. Something has shifted in our culture and our society, and the demands and energy is being placed on young people that is unrelenting and difficult. And I talked to you up in, when I was in school, they used to have a little notebook they'd send around to all the schools in Mullingar, and they'd write notes about people in that book. And we were all terrified that one day they'd write a note about us. And you literally lived in that fear. Now kids are dealing with that on a nuclear level. And I'm more interested in the why, because when you understand the why, then you can design intervention. But the problem is we often try to design intervention without knowing what the problem is. The problems are very varied and complex. And although mental health issues are complex, the solutions aren't. The solutions are early intervention. We know that, the evidence internationally, best practice all over the world, but we spend little to none of it in terms of our mental health budget, very little. We often talk about the, you know, you see in politics, they talk about the 6% of mental health funding is spent on just on mental health, and it should be 12%. I'm more interested in what the 6% is spent on. How do we spend it? We know early intervention works. So it's difficult for me to understand why a huge focus isn't on it, because at Lust for Life, we've now, I said, we're in 1,050 schools. We started with DESH schools. 29% of our schools are DESH schools. We wanted to look at that area because that is a very complex, difficult area. The results and the evidence that we got back through UCD and the evaluations in DCU are mind-blowing. And the other thing we had to do was figure out was we cannot put this on teachers. I heard a psychotherapist in the news yesterday saying, oh, you know, it's not their job within the education system. I agree with that, but I agree. I think the education system and the curriculum needs to change because we're still teaching the same stuff in secondary school that I learnt. Tell me it's the same world. Education for me is teaching kids and giving the tools to go into the world. And it's a different world and we have to come at this differently. So I look at mental health in a different way. The thing that's really important in early intervention is early assessment. So if you have a kid who's got issues with neurodivergence, if you have a kid who has issues with other areas, we intervene early. We change their entire life. We literally change their entire life. Now most of them are waiting 2 years for an assessment. The damage that happens in that two-year period is gargantuan. Their development, their brain development, all that kind of stuff. So we have to put our resources into that. And then when you look at mental health, you've got to look at it in two ways. Early intervention, preventative models, which is exactly what they're the guys are trying are building here, and then the crisis model. We'll always need a crisis model. You know, there's always going to be mental health issues. You know, Rachel said sometimes there's a few bigger issues within the schools. The CAMHS report in January 2023 was the catalyst and the stake in the ground for me to do my PhD, because I looked at it and I said, how are we still accepting this? How are we still looking at this? We have psychiatrists in Dubai diagnosing children in Kerry on Zoom and then putting them on drugs and not monitoring them. So there's another side to this that we have to talk about. But early intervention is the solution. It really is. But we also have to understand we need to think bigger and more passionately about your mental health. It is my entire focus for the rest of my life. But it's when I see the girls talking like that and I see how emotionally intelligent young people are now, it's exciting and there's huge progress. And this has the chance to do something very special if it's done right.
So let's stay with that for a second. So you're now part of the community. You're now living here. You have a role to play, like everybody else in this room. So what is the, you know, this is happening. This is happening today. So that early intervention we're talking about is possible, right?
It is possible. I wouldn't do this. None of us would do this if we, as I said, the issues are complex. The solutions aren't. And I think sometimes we use words like complex to do nothing about it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's too complex. And then it becomes bureaucratic, and then there's just all these. So I believe, and it's brilliant to have the ministers here. It really is, because I truly believe politicians do want to do something about this, but I think this area terrifies them. I really do. I think it's the Pandora's box no one's willing to open. I've researched 200 years of mental health intervention. I've seen those reports from 1817, 1966, 2010, the same thing. And I think really what we have to look at as a country is to move past the over-reliance on a medical model and start putting our emphasis on therapeutic models. Because the issue is when we put all our emphasis on medical models, we put little to no emphasis on therapeutic. So the picture to paint here for everybody in this room, you have a child with maybe some learning difficulties or autism's on the spectrum. So paint a picture of what would be the ideal situation there. They pick up on it, that child's assessed immediately. The assessment comes back and says the child has, you know, ADHD or autism. And then a solution is put in place within the school system. And then that child is given the tools at that age in an environment to grow up as a teenager, as an adult, and understand the world and be able to deal with it. And the difference it makes, guys, is just gargantuan. What I love about Ireland, there's 5 million people living here. It's the size of Manchester. If we can't do it here, where can we do it? And that's a real opportunity. And as a Lust for Life, what I wanted to always be, and what Rachel's obviously being here, is not a stone thrower. Don't throw stones at a problem. Come up with solutions. But it needs community to do that. It's very hard, this work. So it needs people to rally. You all have a responsibility here. We all do. And I think as terrifying as that feels sometimes because we're not too sure what the solution is, we'll find one. That's the difference. We'll find one, but it has to be collective. It has to be honest. And at a political level, it has to be courageous and brave.
Yeah. And I see you're nodding there, Jennifer. And I agree with everything that's been said. And we do, and that's one thing that's very clear from tonight. It is a complex issue. We're not going to solve it by 10:30 here. No, we're all going to go home and everything's sorted, but we are going to find the smallest possible solution to move forward. What do you think when you're hearing what has been said so far? What's your view as a community, as a politician in the community?
I suppose the first thing that's sort of coming to me is, well, because for each child that's been failed, because there's so many children being failed at the moment, for each child it's also a family, because it puts huge pressure on the family and on parents trying to deal with it, and then the wider community, then the schools. So the ripple effect of this is incredible. And I absolutely agree, it is early intervention is where we need to be going. So, you know, it's how do we get there? Mm. How do we fill that gap? And I think there's sort of state and national issues, and we did see the CAMHS report, and it talks about the number of children, how long they're waiting for that kind of intervention. And even when they do get the support through CAMHS, actually a lot of them feel that it's not given them what they need. So I think there's obviously a real need to look at that from a national level. But then how do we relate that here? How do we do something immediate within our community that's within our control? Because I think that is, it's more difficult because it is a political thing that needs to be done. So, like, you know, us here in our roles, either as a roles or parents or community leaders or as teachers and SNAs,
Think about you as a parent, right? Let me ask you the question before. And you have different, again, you have the spectrum of the kids. And when you're coming across some difficulties, because we all have kids, we come across, hopefully they're not too much, but what do you need as a parent?
What do I need? Oh, my goodness. I need supports for my children.
Okay.
And I think sometimes people would say, well, you know, you're a politician, you can get them, you know, but actually, no. My children have had specific issues and they're dealing with them so well. They really are, but they needed supports.
Okay.
And those supports weren't available for them. And it took a lot of sort of scrabbling around, getting a few weeks here, a few weeks there. But it's not sufficient. It really isn't. But even with that level of support, you can see how far they've come and how, as I was saying earlier on, how open they are. Like, it's incredible how open they are to having the discussions, taking that support to learning. They're brilliant. I think if you were to compare how they take this to how, like, certainly when I was growing up, you know, you would never talk about feeling vulnerable. Whereas I listen to my children now and they're talking about their friends and they'll say, they'll say to it, look at man, I love you. You know, we're all going to work together. Don't worry about things. Like, it's just incredible hearing how they talk to each other and how open they are.
That's the progress that I think, that's what makes me want to do this. Mm-hmm. This is happening. And when I was 14 years of age, my hero died, Kurt Cobain. And I asked the teacher what happened and he punched my desk and screamed in my face and called him a coward. That was my mental health education. And what teachers are doing, primary and secondary school, like, I remember going into primary school recently to do, and it was actually quite emotional to see the care that teachers bring to the kids now, the absolute care, the empathy that didn't, to be honest, exist when I went to primary school. And, like, I'll tell you a story that I think, to me, if we really want to change anything, we got to connect to the feeling of what it must feel like for a child to feel like that. And the way I do that is, I have a friend, one of my best friends, and his daughter has crippling anxiety, social anxiety, finds it difficult to leave the house. And she won't leave the house. She's a really bright, intelligent, she's a dancer, she loves singing. And her relationship with her dad is just breaking down because he can't understand why she is the way she is. Everything he keeps saying to me. So I found it frustrating that he couldn't figure out what was wrong with her. And I said, the one thing I knew about him, if you gave him €1 million tomorrow morning, he still wouldn't set foot in an airplane. He won't get in an airplane. It terrifies him. It literally brings him to his knees with fear. And I said, right, tomorrow morning you have to get in an airplane. What would you do? He said, I'd punch the head off you. I would be gone. I would run a mile. Forget about it. And I said, well, that's what it's like for your daughter to leave the house. Now you know what the feeling is. It's not up to you to decide what's rational or not. Your fear of flying is irrational. So when you connect into the feeling of what it must feel like to be terrified by the world, it drives you into action. That's what it does, because you can't have kids thinking like that. And the why for me, and I think that's the most important point I'll make, we've taken a generation of young children to a pandemic where we were all terrified. We were all watching the 6 o'clock news every day go, how many did he say? We were all being told, you can't do this, can't go anywhere. They picked up on every ounce of that. They absorbed it. And now they're anxious. And that's a healthy human response to what they've gone through. We shouldn't pathologicalize that. We shouldn't rush to medicalize that or go, there's something wrong with them. Maybe there's something very right with them. And maybe we can just support them in a better way and hold them in their fear a little bit. But I do think in this work, and I think what's happening here is powerfully positive if it's done the right way. But I think we still have to acknowledge that Ireland's never got it right, but no country in the world has ever got it right. Yeah. Why can't we be the country that does it? That's what I'm passionate about.
Absolutely, and that's where this whole conversation started. We said, okay, if we can do it, why not make it a blueprint for something that can be replicated? And now it might sound utopian and sounds grandiose, but why not? It isn't, right? It isn't, because from what we're hearing, and I want to go back to Rachel about, because I know teachers are plenty to do. I know that. I spend 2 hours with them, 1 hour in 1 week, 1 hour in another week. I was like, well, really do all that stuff? And they were like, you're really going to be here for an hour? We have loads of stuff to do. And I said, well, you know. But anyway, we did. We get through, and then they linked it to the curriculum. So it's okay. You can still bring me into the school. But again, we need to be careful what we wish for as well, you know, because we do need to help. The focus is still on the child. There's nothing else in this room that is as important. No politicians, no podcasters, no principals. It's the child. So from a school's point of view, what are your solutions? What do you see? How can you implement anything within the school that it doesn't interfere with what the amount of work you're really doing?
And it's really interesting listening here, you know, this evening or tonight. I just feel we need to start somewhere. And this is a very positive community-led wellbeing initiative for the children. And I just even think, looking around the room again tonight, this is going to have a huge impact, the fact that we're all going to be working together. So two things stand out to me. It's early intervention, as you were saying, Niall, to know that's the key. And talking to kids before things get too big, talking to them at the early stage. And I think we have the children at the foundation years, you know, we're setting them up for secondary school, for third level, and we have them when they're young and they're like sponges, you know, when they're open and they're looking to us for guidance, for role models. They're looking, you know, to talk. And I suppose I feel that we have a responsibility in those years to give them that support. And again, we're not looking for necessarily medical intervention with a lot of the children. It's just giving those supports and talking early on. And I think that's really important. So early intervention and support in their school and in their community. And I think that's what we can achieve from here. But going back to the teachers, I absolutely agree with teachers. They have a huge workload, and I have to say they're incredible what they do. They're just pulled in so many different directions throughout the school day. So academics is just one side now. There's so much more, cyber safety, you know, well-being. There's just so many different sides. And I suppose going back to the play therapist, that's why we're really looking for a play therapist to support the teachers as much as the kids and the parents. Because, you know, teachers can go to the play therapist and can say, look, I have this child in my class. I've really tried to do this, tried to do that. I'm coming to you as the expert. Am I doing enough? Am I doing too much? Am I doing the wrong things? And then it's listening to the teachers and the questionnaires and their concerns that there is, you know, there is concern out there for some kids, you know, in their classes. Are they doing enough? You know, I can't get the kid into school. I'm really working with the parents. You know, I'm ringing them every week. We still can't see the child. You know, so it's listening to the teachers as much as listening to the children and the parents, you know. Yeah. And I suppose what we can do at school base, and we're doing plenty through SPHE, and we do Weaving Wellbeing and Friends for Life, and we're even doing some Lust for Life, which is great. All these programs are really, really good, and they really benefit the children, and the children are learning so much from them. But I suppose there is a small percentage of children that, you know, it's gone past a little bit that, and that's why we're pleading for the play therapist, for the expert. But again, I do think with the themed months and the talks for the parents, we're going to be bringing the parents on the journey with us, do you know? Yeah. And I think that's what's really strong in this initiative, that we're bringing the parents, the kids, the community with us, and we're all looking out for the children. And just to say, we're going to have two family events. We were chatting about this upstairs, you know, that sometimes we feel we have to do really big things for the kids, exciting things, you know, we really build things up, but actually kids just like simple things and hanging out and spending time with friends and family, you know, and that's what we're listening to. And I suppose to start off, to launch the initiative in September, we'll be doing our first theme for that month. But what we're going to, and that's the theme, is new beginnings and embracing that with the children. And then the talk will be for the parents on, you know, anxiety and change, you know, and dealing with that. But I suppose to launch that off, we're going to be having a family fun day on the beach in South Beach, a sandcastle, a good old-fashioned fun competition. And we might be looking for some celebrities to judge them.
We can join in. He's no longer a celebrity.
No, my sandcastle.
He's lost that status a long time ago. Yeah. When he moved to Greystones, he lost his status.
And then to finish it off then in June, we're going to be having an outdoor film down on the beach. So everybody comes with their picnic bag. So just bringing it back to the simple things and feeling supports there for the kids. And I think going back to the government, I have to say, like, I wrote a proposal in a year ago to our ministers, and I know to Jennifer Whitmore, but you know, both Minister Simon Harris and Minister Stephen Donnelly, they both came back straight away and they were really trying to get behind this and asking me more questions, and they've been a huge support. And I think just the fact that you're all here tonight, I know how incredibly busy you are, says to me that you're taking this serious and that you're, you know, you're working with us and you're going to do your best by us, and that's all we can ask, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And apart from the fact you didn't look at me when you were looking for a celebrity,
Andre,
that's fine, that's okay.
Of course,
Jennifer.
Of course.
So I'm talking to Jennifer now. Jennifer,
I'll call you a celebrity. It's
yeah,
fine,
thank you. There's something there that was really interesting that Rachel said, and I'm wondering, from both being a parent, which is that's your most important job. That's what you're really good at. I'm sure you're a wonderful politician. I can't vote in this country, so it doesn't matter to me. But you are, as a parent and as a politician, you hear a lot of people. Your clinic is open and people come to you with all sorts. What do you think is it something missing from the childhood now in the constituency? Is it something missing or is it too much? In the town, I'm talking about this, I'm not talking about the big wild world. In Greystones, what do we need? And Delgany.
Do you know, I think Greystones is changing. Yeah. Right? It's getting bigger. And we've so many new people into our community now as well. So even like, I think I moved here maybe 12 years ago I'm still a blow-in. When I moved here 12 years ago, it was so much smaller, but we've seen incredible growth. And I think that perhaps because we're getting big, I think we really need to super focus on all of us being part of our community and being involved. Now, I know so many people are involved in different aspects of the community, but I do think that it's something that we have to be really conscious of, to be really constantly thinking, how can I give back to Greystones? You know, what can I do? Is it through my school? Is it through the sports clubs, things like that? Because it's through being part of that community, that's how you get to know the children. And I think what's really good for the children is that when they're hanging around the town, they have all these eyes on them who know who they are and love them, essentially, who are looking out for them, and they feel secure. They know if they're getting up to trouble that such a person's going to tell their mammy and it'll get back. But they know deep down it's out of a place of care. And I think we need to try to keep that connection. And I suppose I am a little bit, just with the growth in the town, I'm a little bit worried that we could lose that. So if I could see anything happen, it would be bringing that real community back together and getting people involved at every level. Our children need to have, you know, there's the whole concept of the one good adult, which I just absolutely love. But I think they need one good adult in lots of different spheres. And when they go into the shop, to know the shopkeeper, to be able to have a chat, to be able to talk about, you know, what's going on today. When they go to their sports club, to know that the coach is looking out for them. If they're feeling a bit upset, that there's someone knows that there's something wrong and will try and make it right or try raise that issue for them. Similarly with the schools, you know, so that at every point when they're interacting with adults, that they feel that there's people who care for them and that they feel part of something bigger. Because I think what's happening is with social media and just the way our society is going, we're getting a lot more isolated. They don't have to look at each other. You know, trying to teach my children how to say hello when someone comes to the door or how to answer the phone.
Answer the door.
Oh, my God. You know, who comes to the door anymore, right? So, you know, but even answering the phone, like they're very isolated. They have their group of friends. They talk to them in a certain way. But outside that group, they really don't necessarily have to interact. So whilst their world in one regard, it's gotten really big because they've access to all this information, right? And they know exactly what's going on everywhere in the world. The world has also gone quite small because it's their sort of own little circle of friends, and they're the ones they're on Snapchat with or Instagram. And they don't have to talk to anybody else. They don't have to talk if they're on the bus. You know, there's none of those sort of tangential conversations anymore. They're not sitting on the bus or waiting at the bus stop having the chats with the old man who's sitting there as well. So those interactions are being lost. Mm-hmm. And I think that's not a good thing. And I'd love to see us try to bring that together. So even as adults, if we're downtown and we see a group of kids, just sort of even saying, oh, how's it going, lads? Or, you know, like have, you know, those simple little things, I think would make a big difference, that they feel part of something, you know?
Yeah, and I agree. And I think what you say about being people looking, knowing what you're up to, what you're not up to. But I do believe it's a case of creating that language, that understanding what it means, because I don't know what anxiety means, right? Anxiety means something to me that is completely different from the five-year-old child. And so it's really important to understand, I think, that's my view, that, you know, there's a certain language we can all use. You know, so that child walks through the house, out of the house, where there's a certain language, and then into the school, into the football pitch, and so on. So I don't know. There is something there that needs to be done, can be done.
I think what I think it's important for me maybe to say for people today is to give them something functional that they can actually do to help their children who are anxious. And these are the types of functional things you can bring into school settings. So the first thing I say to anybody, to any of you, your brain isn't there to hurt you. It's the complete opposite. It's an alarm system. It's a security guard. And that's why during the pandemic, you weren't going around shifting strangers and nicking counters. Your brain was trying to keep you anxious because there was something that could kill you that you couldn't see. It was doing its job, and it was doing it very well. That's how your brain has evolved. It evolved when we lived in caves. And every time we left the cave, we thought something bad would happen, even though pretty much most of the time nothing bad happened. And, you know, when we lived in caves in Dublin, rental prices didn't require you to sell vital organs. But that's how the brain works. We got into our safety, the brain came out of hypervigilance, and we camped. And then we went back out to get our food. What's happening now is children, teenagers, and adults are in a hypervigilant state all the time. They don't even know what it feels like to be calm anymore. Do you know what it feels like to be totally calm anymore? You're exposed. Your brain does not know the difference between real and perceived threat. That's the first thing. So think about this for a second. I mean, this is for you to translate your kids, but if your brain knew the difference between a real and perceived threat, when you're crossing the road and you see a car coming, you go, I wonder if that car would hurt. Is it moving fast enough? Your brain just goes, get out of the way. That's its job. Just get out of the way. Don't be a dozy gobshite. Get out. That's its job. So kids' brains now are hypervigilant all the time, always on, always in what we call the amygdala hijack. That's what it's called. The amygdala is a little part of the brain that your fear centers, the CEO of your behavior. So when you want to fight, when you're in an amygdala hijack, it's great. It keeps you alive. But the problem is kids are in it all the time now. Their phone on the time, computer on the time, fear, news. Oh, my God, you can't do that. Oh, we have to fix all your problems. No, and that's what's happening. We're creating this state of hypervigilance in children. So obviously, I don't say that to children, but I'm trying to explain to you why there's a huge level of anxiety at the moment. It's because there should be, because they're overwhelmed by the world. It's moving too fast. It's moving too fast for me. I'm overwhelmed by it. So what can we do about that is probably where I'm getting to. I'm a mindfulness therapist. Mindfulness is a psychological intervention that's deeply effective, but it isn't what we're being sold on apps. And that's what we refer to as Mac mindfulness or mindfulness light. It's just stuff that they can sell you. I work with children. I've written 5 kids' books. We've designed the programs around mindfulness for kids in the schools. I never use the word mindfulness. I give kids the language of emotion. Describe how you're feeling. When I was young, I was told not to be sad, not to be scared, not to be anxious. Be all those things. Validate the emotion in the child. You can't tell a child not to feel something they already feel. It just confuses them. So what I do with kids is I get them into their bodies. When their mind starts to run riot, every one of you are the same. When your mind starts to go, do not use your mind to try and calm down your mind. It won't work. Once the mind's gone, it's gone. And we all know that. You're lying in bed. You have 4,000 thoughts. You're like, oh my God. You're like, Jesus Christ. And it feels like your head is fried. That's the amygdala hijack. So what I teach kids is when you feel that uncomfortable, when you feel uncomfortable, where do you feel it? What do you mean? I said, do you feel it in your body? I feel it here, I say. And they go, oh, I feel it in my belly. So now we know where you feel it in your body. That's your anxiety point. I said, next time you feel anxious, I want you to put your hand there. I want you to breathe into that. Just breathe in and soften it. You don't try and pretend it's not there, because avoidance is the root of all disorder. It's there. It's uncomfortable. Let's see, can you sit with that for a second? Breathe into it. Maybe breathe the colour into it. And they're like, this is mind-blowing for children, because you're getting them, you're giving them a solution. And what happens is when kids get anxious, if they know they have a tool to deal with that anxiety loses its power over them. The other things we do is like the physiological side, breathing techniques. This is a breathing technique every one of you can do when you get anxious. I gave it to Rachel before we came in here, the physiological side. Of course she was anxious. It's a normal human response. We're all anxious. So two sharp inhales through the nose. If you do that three times, you'll feel like you just had a glass of wine. Because what's happening is your central nervous system's now telling your brain, will you relax? Nothing wrong. It's telling that alarm system to go off. Stop, you're being silly now. There's nothing to be scared of here. The other one I do with kids is if they can't sleep, get them to breathe in for 5 in the right hand, out for 5 in the left hand for 10 minutes. It's called cadence breathing. It lowers. So their central nervous system is like this all the time. That's why they're anxious. There's a physiological reason they're anxious. And then they're being told they're anxious. And then there's a self-fulfilling prophecy that they're anxious. Yeah. And now every adult's trying to solve all their problems. One thing Louise asked me to say, and she's worked with children all her life, she set up Jigsaw. She's a founding member of Jigsaw. She said, the problem is parents are being put into a fear factory now and told that they have to have perfectly conventional children. And the children have to, all their problems have to be solved. It's called the bubble wrap theory. You cannot put your kids in bubble wrap. When we were in the 80s, every time I got sick, my mum put me on an antibiotic. It's like, but mum, I'm not even that sick to take the... And I ended up having a really bad immune system because my immune system had nothing to ever do. So it's the same with this, the psychological immune system. If you solve every problem for your child, they won't know what it feels like to build that resilience. So overall, if you give them the tools to understand that that lovely piece of meat between their ears is only trying to help them, you change the language and how you talk to them. You don't, like, and I'll finish with this, sorry, it's a long thing, but these are the functional things you can do with children that work. These work. These are physiological. These aren't some the secret stuff. It works. It's science. But my nephew, Billy, who I mentioned, had crippling anxiety. And I mean, it was really upsetting for everybody. And we didn't know what to do. Couldn't figure it out. I was looking at different professionals but then I said, I tell you what, Billy, I'm going to pick you up from school every Friday. That's the rule. He loves me picking him up from school. But there's a rule. He goes, oh, you need to talk for 15 minutes and I'm not allowed to talk. That was the rule, I said to him. So he'd always start with, will you buy me something? That was the first thing he would say. And then he'd just keep talking. And he would keep talking. I wouldn't interrupt him. And then he says, do you know, I get really scared that mummy's not going to pick me up from school. That was the anxiety. That was it. And rather than go, of course she's going to pick him up, I went, God, that must be a bit scary, Billy. It's a bit scary. He said, yeah, that sounds scary. But, you know, if it ever does happen, I'm going to give the teacher my number and I'll be down for you. Problem solved. Yeah. And that's the thing. I gave him a space. I didn't make him feel silly. And the other thing he did was... Well, my dad, I'm sorry, this is really, but I'm trying to get to a point where what we can do. Well, my dad was in the army, would leave us for often a year at a time. Anyone who's Irish military, Irish Defence Forces, they'd be gone for a year, 15 months to Lebanon and Sarajevo, very safe places. And we would stand in our hall, say goodbye to him. And my mother would go, don't cry. It'll upset your dad. I'm like, but I'm sad. And then he'd see him cry. I'm like, what? That's confusing me. So Billy, in the pandemic, as I said, I was telling the lads upstairs, he had a complete meltdown outside my mum's house, and I was cocooning my mother. And he was just sitting in the car, and I mean, it was a meltdown. It was a fairly impressive one. You could see it from space. And and my sister was like, I can't deal with this anymore. Like, because she was homeschooling him, it was overwhelming for her. So I said, can I talk to him? She goes, get out there and talk to him. And he was screaming at the top of his lungs, I want to move to Australia. Because someone had heard on the news that the lockdowns weren't happening in Australia. And then he just goes, I just want to hug my nana. And I went back into my sister and went, that's what we should have been allowed to. So it's about validating emotion, understanding it's normal, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Being a human is hard. It's challenging. It's challenging for kids. They're not always going to be happy. They're not always going to be sad. They're not always going to be anxious. But if you can give them tools to figure this out, and this is why we're passionate about it, because these work. But if we don't do them now, we'll be having this conversation in 50 years' time.
Thanks very much. I'm going to give you a break to go and practice your breathing. But do still buy a glass of wine here, if it's okay. And we'll come back in 15 minutes. Thanks a million.
And that was part one of the launch of It Takes a Village, an initiative by the Greystones community, recorded in the Whale Theatre on the 12th of May, 23. There is a part two with Minister Simon Harris and Stephen Donnelly, so please listen and let us know your thoughts. Thank you.